From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, money, politics, and private prisons. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Raymondville, Texas, in Willacy County, has another name, Prisonville, USA. The nickname came about because the town's economy is reliant on prisons and an ICE detention center for migrants. This has brought a lot of controversy and national headlines. Today on Texas Matters, a deep dive into the town's complicated history with private prisons over the last two decades. Here to tell that story is reporter Max Parrott and Texas Public Radio's Reynaldo Leanos Jr.
The main drag in Raymondville looks like a lot of small Texas towns. It's lined with fast food restaurants, local shops, and abandoned storefronts that haven't changed much in years.
The town sits in the Rio Grande Valley in South Texas, near the U.S.-Mexico border. About 35% of Willacy County's 22,000 residents live in poverty. The unemployment rate is 10%, more than double the average in Texas.
But much of its employment is in the detention and incarceration business, and that has drawn unwanted attention from the media, like the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the BBC. Last year, NPR's Ari Shapiro came to Raymondville to report on the opening of an ICE detention center that had been a prison for mostly immigrants.
For years, immigrants had complained about overcrowding, rodents, and physical and sexual
abuse. An ACLU report in 2014 found that the private company that ran the jail used solitary confinement as overflow bed space for inmates. It also found that toilets constantly overflowed and there were bug infestations in sleeping areas. Most of the media attention, though, originated with this incident almost a year after that report, when a riot broke out inside the jail.
There's a big fire inside the jail.
There's a big fire?
Yeah,
Who am I talking to?
You don't need to know who you're talking to.
The facility was shut down. Now it's back as a detention center run by the same private prison management company. And there are still two other prisons and one jail in town. So how did Raymondville, Texas, aka Prisonville, USA, get to this point?
And just how far will a local government go to create a stable economy? We went to Willacy County to find out.
Before there were prisons in Willacy, there was agriculture.
Willacy County has a proud tradition of farming and ranching that goes back generations. And you'll find much more of that history on display at the Willacy County Historical Museum.
We met tour guide Elva Sayas and her husband Manuel at the Historical Museum.
Well, I left Raymondville in 1957. I joined the military. And later on, about 1960, it was going down. You know, people were moving out, and youngsters like myself joining the service or going to college. And the Onions, they moved that to West Laco. It's still a lot of Onions around here, but they moved the Fiestas over there.
After farming came factories, and Raymondville was a company town.
Carter's, where I worked.
Yeah, well, Carter's.
It was baby clothes.
Yeah. Fabricated baby clothes, yes. And small items.
Yeah, and everybody here worked there.
This new economy didn't last long. Companies left for Mexico, and then there was a new industry.
And everyone works now in the prisons. We have three of them.
Juan Angel Guerra was the county district attorney when the private prisons came calling in the late 1990s.
They started knocking on the doors and people, you know, hey, we got private prisons, they're gonna make you a lot of money. And and right away, they came talk to me.
Who was knocking on the door?
The private prison, Mr., I don't remember their name, so you probably, I'm sure, what's the guy's name?
James Parkey?
Yeah, James Parkey. Total jerk. It was one of the first ones that came in. Just by his way of talking, it was like...
How did he talk?
Well, like, we don't know shit. He knows it all. Like, you're not doing me a favor. I'm doing you a favor. I'm bringing you jobs.
The man Guerra referred to is James Parkey, the president of a private prison consulting group named Corplin. The firm had a team of architects, builders, bond dealers, and lawyers. Parkey traveled town to town in Texas and neighboring states selling struggling counties on the idea that for-profit prisons would rake in cash. He promised local politicians much-needed jobs and revenues from per diems. That's the money they would receive for each inmate.
Corpland had at least one politician on the payroll, State Senator Eddie Lucio Jr. Texas ethics filings show that in 2004 and 2005, Corpland paid Lucio as a consultant, although he later told local news outlets he worked for Corpland since 1999. Again, District Attorney Juan Guerra.
It was not like if they were hiding it, okay? He was a consultant. And at the same time, he's pushing, but he's also my senator.
Guerra filed a federal lawsuit against Lucio in 2008, alleging that he misused his position in accepting money. The multi-count indictment included then-Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez and Vice President Dick Cheney.
The vice president is now accused of engaging in organized criminal activity. Now,
here's a clip from the local TV station, KRGV, on the day of the indictment.
We spoke with the vice president's press secretary earlier today. She tells News Channel 5 that she had never heard of an indictment from Willacy County, nor had she heard of Willacy County. Guerra recently told News Channel 5 he was investigating corruption within the private prison system following an inmate's death.
But about a month later, all charges were dismissed.
A judge says there isn't enough probable cause to support the indictments against Senator Eddie Lucio Jr., the vice president, and others.
Cesar Cuauhtemoc Garcia Hernandez followed this story closely. He teaches immigration law at the University of Denver and is the author of the book Migrating to Prison. He says he remembers not thinking much of Vice President Dick Cheney's indictment.
He was an investor in a private prison corporation that is not at all unusual. And Senator Lucio's involvement seems to me the kind of murky legal area that a lot of lobbying exists in. It, I think, is especially troubling to see him lobbying on behalf of private prison corporations.
Lucio declined to comment for this story. According to Texas ethics filings, the state senator stopped his consulting work with Corpland in 2005.
By then, Willacy County had taken a gamble on private prisons, several actually. The first was at state jail in 1996, then later, a regional detention center. But in 2006, it opened its biggest prison, a correctional center known as Tent City, because of its dome-shaped Kevlar buildings.
Corpland convinced the county to fund the prisons with municipal bonds, or munis for short. They allow public agencies to get loans to build infrastructure. The bank provides the loan and breaks it up into pieces in order to sell to investors.
Willacy County took out over $60 million in muni bonds to build the Tent City. That's a huge amount if you consider the county's entire annual budget is about 1/6 of that.
But experts will tell you muni bonds are high risk. Matt Fabian is a researcher with Municipal Markets Analytics, a research firm that tracks muni bonds. Fabian says that most muni bonds have a low expectation of default, but it's much higher for projects like jails.
Because, you know, these kinds of things that can go wrong are inherently unpredictable. And frankly, no one expects a failed jail building to be worth very much. Ideally, the investors buying these are going into it with their eyes open, with the expectation that there could be failures.
We spent months digging through municipal bond filings, court records, and county budgets. It turns out a lot of counties that use this financing structure to build private prisons met problems down the road.
Willacy County contracted with the construction company Hale Mills to build the Tent City. The company had a history of leaving behind financial wreckage. 11 counties in Texas defaulted on their loans in the last 10 years. And it wasn't just Texas. Between 1994 and 2009, 7 out of the 31 prisons Hale Mills built in Texas, Colorado, and New Mexico defaulted on their muni bonds.
Did they take on risks? You bet your ass they did.
Christopher Kit Taylor was head of the Municipal Securities Rulemaking Board from 1978 to 2006. Taylor says it wasn't clear that these small, one-stoplight towns had the infrastructure to deal with a big prison facility.
Are you going to have water? Are you going to have sewer? Are you going to have cops? Even if all the employees came in from outside.
But sometimes the question was even more basic. Would there be people to fill the beds?
In many cases, we found that the answer was no. It turns out that state and federal agencies like ICE and the Bureau of Prisons often send fewer prisoners than expected, or none at all.
Take Jones County, about 500 miles north of Willacy. The Texas Department of Criminal Justice awarded the county an operating contract for an in-custody drug treatment center for felons in danger of breaking probation or parole. Officials floated $35 million in muni bonds to build the 935-bed facility.
The county signed a contract with the construction company, Hill Mills, in 2009. The facility was finished a year later. And then, Jones County Judge Dale Spurgeon got some crushing news.
I received a phone call from Texas Department of Criminal Justice that they were not going to populate the facility at that time.
For the next year, Spurgeon and the Texas Department of Criminal Justice tried to find inmates to fill the prison. None came. The county defaulted because it couldn't cover the bond payments without revenue.
But there are other reasons why there weren't enough inmates to fill the prisons. Here's Matt Fabian again.
It seems typically that some event will happen in the jail. Either a prisoner will die or be injured in some inappropriate way, or something else related to the handling of the prisoners will happen. The states or governments who put the prisoners in the private jail will pull their people out.
That's what happened at a prison in Maverick County, about 300 miles from Raymondville. Geo Group, one of the country's biggest private prison companies, withdrew from operating the prison after a woman accused one of the guards of rape in 2013. He later pleaded guilty to assault with intent to commit another offense.
Maverick County defaulted on its bonds after Geo pulled out, and the prison closed.
Willacy County's first problems with private prisons began with the Willacy County State Jail, which the Geo Group, then called Wackenhut, opened in 1996. 5 years later, inmates beat another inmate named Gregorio De La Rosa to death using socks filled with padlocks, while the warden and others watched.
After De La Rosa's death, Juan Angel Guerra, the acting DA, began an investigation to find out what happened. By 2004, he uncovered something he wasn't looking for.
The commissioners were getting kickbacks.
Two Willacy County commissioners accepted $10,000 in bribes in return for voting in favor of another prison. After Guerra found out about the bribes, he handed the case off to the FBI and the Texas Rangers.
We just kept on tracking the money. And then the feds took over. And so I was working real close with the feds. So they pled guilty, the two commissioners.
A few months later, the Willacy County Commissioner's Court voted to stop dealings with Corplan. It cited evidence from the FBI investigation, but the results of that investigation left something unresolved.
Who gave the commissioners the bribes? According to documents we obtained from the Texas Rangers, the bribes came from James Parkey of Corplan, the same guy who came knocking in Willacy County in the 90s. And by 2006, Parkey was back in Willacy.
We found county court minutes that showed he was there to push the construction of a new facility, that big tent facility you heard about earlier.
James Parkey did not respond to requests for comment, but he wasn't the only one pushing for the new facility.
All of a sudden, there was a big contract that was coming in with the big circus, the big tents. That was one of the biggest contracts that there were. Okay.
Former DA and, Juan Angel Guerra
and,
again.
Bush wanted to have it done like quick, like within, because it was for all for show, and that Bush was going to come, and but we had to have it up and running, and all of a sudden there's people are out there constructing, and they had not even approved anything, and there was already machinery out there.
ICE required the 2,000-bed facility ready within 3 months, because President Bush was going to attend the opening and announce his new immigration policy to expand detention space for ICE.
And so we've increased funding for border security from $4.6 billion in 2001 to more than $7.6 billion in 2006. In other words, you can't say to the American people, we're going to make a commitment to secure the border unless you spend money to secure the border. And we're doing just that.
The president billed this as a part of a golden era of the Rio Grande Valley.
It's amazing how this country is grown and how vital the valley is of the state of Texas. It's got to be exciting for people to grow up in this part of the world and see the new prosperity.
But the facility soon picked up a reputation.
The complaints started almost immediately, and the initial complaints had to do with people being hungry.
Local immigration attorney Jody Goodwin called the facility Ritmo, a play off Gitmo, the nickname for Guantanamo Bay.
They complained of spoiled food. They complained of bugs, worms, maggots, rats. And I saw it.
Goodwin and other attorneys gave legal advice to detainees in the tent facility.
The attorneys took the complaints to ICE, but Goodwin says they were brushed off. The next step was going to the media.
Press, vigils, protests. You didn't have a choice. We started getting affidavits. We're getting ready to sue them.
But their efforts went nowhere, and the problems continued for years. Then, in August 2011, a guard at the facility pled guilty to sexually assaulting a detained woman.
Frontline began reporting on accounts of sexual abuse in the prison. In this episode, the prison's mental health specialist describes hearing about the abuse.
I knew something was wrong when I started getting women coming in complaining about being harassed by guards for sexual favors. I had got to a point where I knew and felt comfortable with some of the guards that I went to them and said, look, just tell me, is this really going on out there? We keep getting these detainees complaining and saying this and that. And the sad thing was that many of the guards supported it.
By the time that segment ran in 2011, ICE announced it wasn't renewing its contract. The federal government then found another agency to take its place, the Bureau of Prisons. It became a federal prison dedicated to holding immigrants convicted of low-level offenses.
It was a good deal for Willacy County from a revenue standpoint. It was making more money, but a big portion of that money went to the county's general fund, and that made the county more reliant on the prison for day-to-day functioning, like putting all your eggs in one basket.
But the problems didn't go away after the Bureau of Prisons took over.
The ACLU's 2014 report on private detention facilities included interviews with detainees. They talked about conditions inside the Willacy facility. Hear readings from some of those testimonies.
This place is hard on us, on everyone, and hard on our families, too. Sometimes we don't tell anything about it to our families. They don't know that we suffer, that we're not treated with respect, or that we sometimes lack food or blankets. We don't tell our families. I just don't want my kids to see me like this.
Sometimes I feel suffocated and trapped. A lot of people get very upset and angry. Sometimes they become so frustrated that they even speak of burning down the tents. But what's the point? They build them back up.
On February 20th, 2015, detainees rioted during a protest of prison conditions.
Ring 911. Hey, 911, we're at Willacy County. There's a f***ing big fire, and we need all the inmates for the shoot to let them out. There's a big fire inside the jail.
There's a big fire?
Yeah, okay.
Who am I talking to?
You don't need to know who you're talking to. Y'all need to send somebody to come and open these doors from the chute. Everybody, if they don't come and get them out, they're going to asphyxiate it.
One of the people who worked at the facility was Becky Garcia. She was in charge of inventory and property for the inmates.
They told us, you know, we're on lockdown. I said, we are? It's like, yes. I said, what's going on? It's like, well, some of the inmates want to riot.
Prisoners cut and burned holes through the Kevlar tents to escape.
And the tents, you know, they're tents. Anybody can break out of those things right away. After a while, yeah, they started coming out of the tents and everything. I guess they turned them down, you know.
The facility closed.
Willacy County had taken out debt, $60 million to build that tent city, plus another $18 million to turn it into a federal prison in 2011. After the federal government left, the county, then the third poorest in Texas, was on the hook. Aurelio Guerra is the younger brother of the district attorney, Juan Guerra. He had just become the Willacy County judge.
Back then, you know, we didn't know if it was going to take, you know, 2 weeks, a month, to fix that thing up and bring it back. We were always optimistic that, hey, this thing is going to, you know, come back.
It didn't. Willacy lost more than $2 million a year the prison closed. The county administration let all of its employees go, except for a skeleton staff. Guerra was worried they wouldn't be able to perform basic county functions.
To recoup its losses, Willacy County filed a lawsuit against construction company Hill Mills and the Management and Training Corporation, or MTC. The suit alleged that the facility's construction showed, quote, fraud and slipshod workmanship, and that MTC's abysmal management led to the riot.
The one person determined to make Willacy County debt-free was Aurelio Guerra, the county judge. He saw President Trump's immigration policies trigger a sea change in the private prison industry. Guerra wanted to make the prison deals work for the good of the county.
And suddenly, there were interested buyers in the abandoned facility. One of them was MTC, which was in the process of being sued by the county for poor management of the prison. Here's Judge Guerra again.
We didn't see it as part of a settlement or anything. We saw it as, hey, if they're going to buy it, they're going to have to open it, because how can you buy something and not make it work, right?
And Guerra became the bell of the ball.
So somebody put it like, you're the dancer and you have two choices of who to dance with, something like that, which was great. I mean, we needed a boost.
MTC bought the prison from the county and paid off its $68 million in debt. The county then dropped its lawsuit against Hale Mills and MTC, and the facility reopened about a year later with a new name, El Valle, or The Valley. And it had a new purpose, to detain undocumented immigrants.
But what happens if immigration policies change again? We put that question to our muni bond expert, Kit Taylor.
Your guess is as good as mine.
Last February, the Office of Inspector General criticized ICE's contracts with local governments. It said that, quote, ICE has no assurance that it executed detention center contracts in the best interests of the federal government, taxpayers, or detainees.
We looked at the contracts of the El Valle Detention Center. It was projected to be between 75 and 100% full by October 1st of last year. In November, it was reported that the facility was less than half full.
And Jody Goodwin, the immigration attorney we heard from earlier, doesn't think much will be different this time around.
I mean, yeah, you don't just get to change the name on the outside and think, voila, okay, it's new, it's better, it's different or something, you know. That was my first reaction, is that, great, you know, same old, we're gonna be back to the same crap where we, you know, have to cull complaints and start a campaign to try to shut the place down again.
The Nakamoto Group, a contractor hired to assess detention standards, inspected El Valle about 6 months after reopening to see if the facility met the ICE detention standards.
The report found 17 grievances from inmates and said it did not meet the food service standard.
It said people at the facility did not keep food at the appropriate temperatures and handled the food without proper sanitation. The report also found that medical care services were lacking. Jody Goodwin says a mumps outbreak forced a quarantine for everyone, which meant no visits with her clients.
I had some clients that I wasn't able to see them for over 2 months. And I had several that like couldn't even go to court, and their courts got rescheduled for, you know, months. And then it stopped. But it's back.
A recent FOIA request showed that there are 55 confirmed and probable cases of mumps inside the El Valle facility in 2018. The CDC reports there were about 900 cases at ICE facilities nationally between September of 2018 and August of this year.
ICE did not respond to our request for comment for this story. MTC says over the last year, it has rectified the issues in the Nakamoto Group report. County Judge Aurelio Guerra says he hasn't heard about any of the recent issues at El Valle. He's grateful for the detention center because the county recently experienced flooding that cost millions of dollars in damage.
If we did not have the detention center, we would have a much harder time to come up with a balanced budget and operate the counties.
Guerra says he wants to diversify the county's economy so that it's not just reliant on the revenues from the detention center and prisons. He's already helped bring in several windmill projects, but that's not nearly enough.
We won't be doing okay until we're in the top of the best counties in Texas. You know, we need to compare ourselves to something, right? Which is a big challenge, but nevertheless, we're at the very bottom.
And unless alternative revenues can be found, prisons in Raymondville, Texas, also known as Prisonville, USA, may be here for a long time.
I'm Max Parrott.
And I'm Reynaldo Leaños Jr. for Texas Matters.
Ray Llanos Jr. joins us now to tell us a little bit more about the reporting on this special investigative project. Ray, there's another big dot to connect in the story with not just Willacy County, but with the use of these ICE detention centers, this sprawling detention system that has exploded under the Trump administration. We do know that these corporations that build these private prisons and staff them and manage them donated a lot of money to the Trump administration. And it does seem like we should take a look at how they are funding Trump and his GOP allies, and then they craft policies that actually fill the prisons. And so the private prison corporations can make massive profits. But the question should be looked at is, do people who are ending up in these prisons, are they actually criminals?
In the story, we heard from immigration lawyer Jody Goodwin. She represents people who, you know, are currently at El Valle. And some of those people that she represents are asylum seekers. And she was telling me that some of those people that she's representing are people who are waiting for their day in immigration court or waiting to have their credible fear test conducted. And she was telling me that a lot of these detainees would be there about 2 to 4 months because that's how long it would take, like, you know, an asylum officer to do their credible fear test. And then from there, they would be either released on bond or they would still be detained while they're waiting for their immigration court hearing for their asylum case.
So people are wondering if it's politics that's driving the policy and not national security to create these prisons and then fill them with individuals. How is this being reflected by other people in the political sphere?
Private prisons is definitely a conversation that's being had, you know, among some of the Democratic presidential candidates. And one of them is Cory Booker. In one of the debates earlier this year, Booker criticized these private prison companies, and he said that he wants to phase them out. That same week, the Bank of America said it would stop lending to companies that run private prisons and detention centers. And that was a move that JP Morgan and Chase and Wells Fargo had also done. But it's so hard to say where the future is going to be with this, because also another example is California recently passed a bill that would phase out and get rid of their private detention facilities. So I think it's only a matter of time. And we also have another policy, the Migrant Protection Protocols, which is keeping asylum seekers in Mexico. So a bigger chunk of them are not being, you know, held in these facilities. So it's just really uncertain as to what's going to be happening with the future of private detention facilities and private prisons here in the U.S.
All right, Ray Llanos Jr., thank you so much for joining us here on Texas Matters. This story was made possible by the Judith Watson Investigative Fund. We want to say a special thank you to investigative journalist Lisa Reardon Seville, Coulter Jones of the Wall Street Journal, and the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. Thanks to Chad Bernhardt at CUNY, Elizabeth Troval at Houston Public Media, Dominic Walsh, and the entire team here at Texas Public Radio. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You could also write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.